everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the inaugural episode of the Another Jobless Millennial podcast, where we explore the challenges and obstacles millennials face in the workplace and provide practical tips, tactics, and strategies to become more successful. Our first guest is a great friend of mine, Andrew Greenberg. A graduate of Virginia Tech, Andrew has spent time teaching in the Union County Public School System. He's hiked over 740 miles on the Appalachian Trail and is now a realtor with Go Greenberg at Keller Williams Realty. He's the founder of Inline Charlotte, the Queen City's premier inline skating club, whose mission is to unite, develop, and promote safe outdoor inline skating in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm really excited to get started, so let's jump right in. Hey, Andrew. Thank you so much for being on the show. Can you start us off by taking us through a brief work and school history, how you came into real estate, and how you ended up where you are?
Sure. Local Charlotte resident, been here since 99, went to Marvin Ridge High School, and then went on to Virginia Tech. As far as work history, I've really held about 10 to 15 different jobs. Many have been short, some a little bit longer, and just never really found that job that I was looking for. Definitely a lot of experience. I refer to myself kind of as a jack of all trades person. And in today's world, that's not as helpful. You need to be a specialist because there's so many people out there that are very connected with technology today that, in my opinion, you struggle being that jack of all trade. I joined Keller Williams over a bunch of other firms. My reasoning was their training, and it turned out to be so much more. They provided incredible training, but also the culture at the office is very unique. Everyone is there so supportive of each other in a field that is cutthroat, you know, a shark tank, if you will, where everybody's competing for listings and sales and buyers. But to find a place where it's that competitive, but also so everybody's so friendly and helpful is a rare find. So I would say I would not be where I am today in my real estate career without all the help of the fellow agents and guidance that they've provided. There's no way. First 5 months was just a lot of work. I had second thoughts. I thought maybe this wasn't for me, or maybe I need to join a team and not be an individual agent. Maybe I need to, you know, get more guidance or just rethink things. And no, just I decided to follow the patience, persistence, and passion philosophy, and it led me to the first sale, and since then I've had 12 in the last 9 months.
Wow.
So it definitely picked up.
That's awesome. So tell me about the first home that you ever sold. Take me through that experience.
It ultimately took an open house to convince some first-time home buyers that I was the real estate agent for them. So I met them in an open house and asked if they were working with an agent. They said they weren't. So I collected their emails and recommended a couple good lenders to them. They got in contact with one of those lenders, and the lender said, "Hey, I got a pre-qual for these clients. Let's go get them home." So I immediately set up a good search. They were ready to move in as soon as possible. So we hit the search hard, found the property, and it actually was a multiple offer situation. We were the highest of five offers and won it. So it was just awesome to see that through. And even at closing, I told them, "You guys never asked, so I didn't feel the duty to disclose, but you were my first transaction." I said it wasn't my first time at the closing table, but first time I was at the closing table as the agent representing
sure.
the clients.
Were they surprised by that?
They were. They had no idea.
In your real estate career, what has been the biggest accomplishment so far for you?
There was a sale that I had a million-dollar home on the lake, Lake Norman, that I was very fortunate to have. I did work with those clients for just over a year on that search.
Wow.
And we ultimately got them a extremely good deal on an incredible house. And I definitely look back at all my clients and say, if I was in their shoes and with their budgets and their needs, I would have made all the same decisions they did.
That's awesome, man. So tell me, what made you choose real estate over another career path?
Overall, working with anybody that needs help or is looking to make a change in their life, which is why I think it leads me right to real estate, is I'm able to help people. There are a lot of great agents out there, and there's a lot of agents who kind of scoot by doing the bare minimum. To me, it's really about taking care of them as you would want to be taken care of yourself, or like you would take care of a family member. For most people, it is their largest financial investment, and that needs to be taken seriously. So I do see real estate being a good fit for my underlying desire of just helping people. I'll break it down even more simple. It's entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
It's a desire to build something that will ultimately help you grow. Early on in real estate, I found it hard to find the motivation to get to work every day. I didn't have momentum. I didn't have any clients.
What are some of the things that you did early in your real estate career that built up some momentum and gave you a couple small wins and kept you getting out of bed each day?
During those times, I was sending a bunch of emails, writing handwritten notes, working on building websites, and just reaching out to any prospective clients, learning more about real estate. And just as long as I was always moving forward, persistence is the idea. You're not going to build a pyramid in one day. But at the end of each day, you have to leave another brick on whichever tier you're building behind.
So what are some of the things that you do on a daily basis that grow your brand?
Always, and first and foremost, is treating others with respect, you know, showing the love for others that you would want for yourself. You will never grow a brand if, you know, at the face-to-face level, you can't convince somebody that, you know, it's a good idea or that this is something that they should be putting their time in. So that's definitely very important. Another thing with growing a brand that I found just super important in today's world is obviously the technology aspect. But it doesn't matter if it's a website or social media. It's about generating good content and getting to your potential customers or clients information that they need.
What are some of those routes that you found that maximize your target audience when you're trying to grow your brand?
In business, they always talk about the sphere of influence when it comes to marketing. And what that means is just everybody that you already know. One way to put it is just be a better friend. You know, send those texts, phone calls. I use an online program that I track everybody that I text, everybody that I call, everybody that I email. And I have it set up to alert me when there's somebody I haven't communicated with in a long time. And so the challenge for me is constantly staying in contact with any and all friends, figuring out what's going on in their lives and taking interest in what problems or successes that they're having and take pride in sharing and being part of that. Human relationships are the core of business.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's an exchange in product, but in the industry that I'm in, it's all about service. I don't think real estate's much different than serving tables. It's a much more complicated transaction, but it's all about your customer and clients and how they feel and making sure that they have a good experience. So just naturally playing to customer service skills is always important.
What's the name of that program that you use that tracks your text messages so you can stay in contact?
It's called Contactually, Contact, like contact,
mm-hmm.
Ually.
What tips can you offer to somebody who wants to get started in their own business as an entrepreneur?
One is a desire. I mean, there has to be that passion, that burning desire to do whatever it is that you're looking to get started in. So that's always first and foremost. Second off, I'd say a routine. So earlier I talked about change, and I think change is so important. But to set yourself up to change, you also need to have a routine. You need to take care of yourself. You need to, you know, have a daily routine of keeping a room clean and clothes clean so you can be successful to leave the home and do these great things. So to afford yourself the opportunity to change, there are some routines you need to follow. And then back to the other point is be open to change. Always, you know, pushing yourself to find new ways of doing things in your daily life that are more efficient so you can open up more free time for all these great opportunities that are presented.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. So tell me some of the things that you do to go above and beyond that separates you from other realtors.
If you think about like every friend you've ever had and you look back at maybe some time you spent with them, there's always that one breakthrough item that can kind of establish yourself as a lifelong friend with that person.
Mm-hmm.
In real estate, every client's different. You know, there's always going to be that one thing that I need to do that's above and beyond that just shocks them. Example, recently there was a young couple looking for a home in a very hot investor neighborhood. The last 10 sales in the neighborhood were all cash because it's, you know, more likely for a seller to get that money, and nobody with financing had gotten something. Something came on the market at 8:00 on a Friday, and by 8:30 I was there at that property with my client showing it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And crawling crawl spaces, going up into attics, doing that, all these little things to really evaluate this home for what it's worth that most agents would just pass on to the inspector.
Sure.
But really, it's just a matter of what's important to your client needs to be very important to you. And whether it is, if you care about your clients, it will be important to you. The short answer is there's always going to be a moment in life with any sort of relationship where somebody really needs your help or somebody has an issue that they can't solve. And that's when, as a friend, I think sometimes it's most important to step up. So when you talk about training, same thing goes there. Every student's going to have that one thing that they're just struggling with. So if you can find a way to evaporate that problem, literally make it disappear, you've solved something for them. Absolutely. That they couldn't maybe do on their own. And that's why human interactions and relationships are so important. It is so easy to be critical or judgmental of somebody else or to give somebody else advice and not take it yourself. There's things I don't do well, and there's things I do extraordinarily. And I think it's a matter of recognizing the ones that you don't do so well and always trying to make it a goal every day to just improve a little bit, kind of back to that one brick a day theory. If you're not getting better, you're getting worse. You know, it's just kind of making that small improvement. And in the long run, you'll definitely, find yourself in a much better place.
Absolutely.
I'm one of those people, I can't sit still. I'm always working. And other realtors will ask me, what are you doing? How are you generating leads? How are you doing this? How are you doing that? I just work. And I say that I do have a plan. I do have things and tasks that I need to complete. But even when I'm not working, I'm working. Always thinking about ideas, trying things out in my head, and then bouncing ideas off roommates or friends and hearing their input. And that's kind of how life should be, in my opinion. Back to the changing. You always want to have something that you're reaching for. For me, the inline skating does represent a large portion of that, and it does give me something to work for. I do find a lot of motivation at the office to stay there all day and night on a rainy day, because tomorrow when it's sunny in the afternoon, I want to be out skating. It is good to have a release, whatever that is.
It is very important to have a release from work and something you can do to take your mind off the stress. So those were great points. Now, I'd love to get your opinion of our generation and how millennials are viewed through your eyes.
Overall, I find millennials very intriguing. I think we're self-sustainable to a certain degree. I think we aspire to take care of the environment. I think we realize that there are issues that our generation is going to face that these older generations don't have to carry the burden for. So I do think we are thinking with a more global mindset, and that is important. There's so many decisions made every day in regards to the global economics and the world and in commerce that we're not making, and it hurts us to watch a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And the generations of leadership in this country are of the baby boomers or sure. Generation X that, I don't think millennials have broken into politics yet. So you do hear them speaking up a lot because they don't feel like their voice is being heard.
Do you think that's going to translate into good leadership down the line for people in our generation? Or do you think that we're just all talk, no action?
Millennials will talk a lot, and
right.
They will also, when it's important to them, go out and improve their point. I think millennials in some aspects have more tools and resources than any other generation. And maybe we're not quite as appreciative of it as we need to be. But I do think in general, millennials, when they find something they want to seek out to do, they will find their way. The biggest struggle of being a millennial
yeah.
is all the labels that other generations put on you, or that you're trying to fit into some mold that is the millennial.
What are some of those labels that you've heard, and do you think that they're true or not true?
I hear crybaby sometimes to millennials, and that one hurts
a little bit.
I mean, you can't generalize a whole generation, but today, if you don't keep up to be a good friend, you have to keep up with your friends on Facebook, or you have to be on Twitter and Instagram and all these different apps just to be a decent friend.
Absolutely.
And that's a lot of pressure. You have to find time and make time for all that. I know it sounds kind of minute, but in my opinion, yeah, crybaby is a term that I don't like being applied to millennials. The other big thing is that millennials like to do work that they find to be rewarding. I think millennials care about what they do day to day. They do worry about the bigger picture sometimes, maybe too much for our own good, but who's to say it is too much? Millennials are young too. That's another way to put it. We're still growing, but when you're comparing different ages, it is very tough to really appreciate anything that anybody's saying.
I agree. Sometimes it is hard to hear those labels, especially when some of us are focused on being successful and working our way to the top without crying and complaining. So good stuff there. Andrew, talk to me about working with different generations in your real estate career.
I've worked with clients from ages 23 to 85. To me, at the root of any generation discussions is a person, and that person we all share so many things in common. And I think that's where we get divided sometimes, is that we've been labeled or we read so many things online. Overall, it's just treating somebody well, giving them respect, paying them attention, listening and participating in conversations they have. I find if you just do these simple things, regardless of their age or generation, there's not too much different. To turn back to technology, I mean, that's really one of the biggest differences in 2017 than the eras that these other generations grew up in. And to me, the exposure that the millennials have had to smartphone technology, computers and internet at younger ages than these other generations does create a little bit more of a instantaneous kind of feeling. I think millennials want things to be simple and quick and painless, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's how the process should be. They like to be very informed too. They like to know everything that's going on, and they're a little more basic in needs.
What about baby boomers and Gen Xers?
With baby boomers, my parents fall in that generation. A number of millennials' parents fall in that generation.
Right.
I find it pretty easy to work with because it's kind of like working with your parents. So you know them pretty well. In real estate, the Generation Xers, they're some of the more difficult clients to work with. When the housing market crashed in the 2007 period, they were the ones in their 30s and 40s in establishing their careers and making these move up purchases, and a lot of them struggled. Many of them have foreclosed, and I believe that generation has some of the highest number of renters. You know, there's a lot of different interesting factors, but as far as working with people of different generations, we're all still human beings. There's no reason to overcomplicate things, but definitely be weary of technology with the older generations.
Wow, that's awesome perspective, man. Thank you. So let's switch gears for a minute. Talk to me about Inline Charlotte. How did you get started skating, and how did Inline Charlotte come to be?
So I lived in Canada briefly as a child and learned how to ice skate there. Wasn't any good. I mean, horrible. And when we moved down here to Charlotte in 99, I continued to play ice hockey. But living in the South, long summers, springs, and falls, it was always a cross-training exercise of mine to inline skate. So I was always just a rollerblader since middle school. I remember going out for hours at a time during the summer, every day or every, you know, multiple times a week, just skating. It left me when I went to college. In high school, I never really inline skated at all. It was actually after I got off the App Trail to explore a job opportunity that did present itself. And during that time, I actually had some free time that I brought the skates out and got back into it and just absolutely fell in love with the sport. I thought that it's something I want to share with other people, people looking for changes in their lives, people looking to find a new hobby or to find a good workout. I'm very passionate about inline skating today because I had a fall where I tore my meniscus, and to this day, running and a lot of other activities bothers my knee. Inline skating does not at all. So I do find a lot of freedom from it. Mm-hmm. It's an activity that I'm very thankful to be able to do. It's very easy on the, you know, your body and such, and it just has so many benefits. It's something that I think a lot of people want to do or need to do, but don't know how or don't know why or where to buy skates. Mm-hmm. And the service I want to provide is just helping people get from the couch to owning a pair of skates and having enough confidence to go around their neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And anytime they need further guidance or advice, I want to be there for them. And I hope that they find passion and love in the sport as well, and that they are able to share that with others.
Absolutely.
You know, I really enjoy your website because I get to see all of these really cool pictures of Charlotte. What's the longest skate that you've ever done?
It was a 49-mile race down in Georgia. Every October, Athens to Atlanta does a organized race. There's actually an 87-mile version of that that I'm training for. The winner of that was 49 years old this past year, and he held an average speed of 18 miles an hour for that whole distance.
Wow.
I did the 49 in 13-mile-an-hour average in about 3.5 hours, so that was a that was quite a feat. This year, I do have some big goals with inline skating. I'm going up to Minnesota to compete in the North Shores Marathon in September. It's a 26-mile inline skating race. And then 2 weeks later, New York City for another inline skating marathon. And then another 2 weeks after that, back to Atlanta for the Athens to Atlanta race. Ultimately, I'd love to see inline Charlotte host a annual race, maybe a 10-mile race through some very beautiful areas of Charlotte that need to be shared with people from out of town, mm-hmm. as well as having weekly skating events from March through October. We hold Wednesday night skates that rotate around town at different greenways, which are very safe locations for first-time skaters. We run that every Wednesday night. And then also I'd like to do a few social events and get into some community service, definitely. Cleaning up greenways and volunteering with Charlotte Mecklenburg Parks and Rec to maybe even help find us a home down the road where we can have a outdoor inline skating circuit or a small track that would be designated specifically for us.
Yeah.
So if we can grow as a club now and start establishing ourselves and start being part of these decisions and where new routes are being made, it ultimately could leave a better footprint in what the infrastructure for pedestrian transportation in Charlotte looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the interesting thing behind there.
Yeah, that's very interesting. What's your favorite place to skate?
I love skating uptown in the Little Sugar Creek Greenway, but really any of the Charlotte greenways are great. There is a end-to-end 4-mile completed greenway right now that is, in the next 2 years, going to be about 25 miles and will extend from uptown Charlotte to the South Carolina line. So that it's going to be an extension to the Sugar Creek Greenway, but for sure that's definitely some exciting stuff coming up and
absolutely
a favorite route. Being that rollerblading was such a big sport in the 90s, everyone has that little memory, that little feeling of rollerblading in their childhood or their youth. For me, skating is an escape. You never skate the same route twice. You never take the same stride twice. And it's also something to kind of master. You can always get better at. I have a long way to go in my journey of becoming a better inline skater.
Andrew, what's next for Inline Charlotte, and what are your growth plans over the next couple of years? How are you going
to
do that?
To me, the culture of the club needs to be established, and that's something I'm working on right now. So far, participation, I've met about 40 members of Inline Charlotte of 130 that are signed up on our meetup page.
Wow.
I think making sure that they're the right kind of people, or that at least whenever we're meeting, they're the kind of people that are encouraging of one another, and that they're the kind of people that care about one another, that's how we're going to grow. I can't grow it on my own. It's going to take help. It's going to take new ideas and skaters that I hadn't even met yet to help get this thing where it needs to be.
Well, that all sounds great, man. If anybody wants to get in touch with Inline Charlotte or find Inline Charlotte, where would you point them?
InlineCharlotte.com. You can just Google Inline Charlotte.
Awesome. And I'll link that in the show notes for anybody who's curious to check it out. So let's switch gears for a second and talk about the Appalachian Trail. You hiked 745 miles on the Appalachian Trail. Tell me a little bit about that. What was your motivation for doing that?
I just come off a short employment with UPS as a delivery driver. Just checking out that whole world, I thought logistics were something I was fairly interested in. And now I had just enough money for taking a couple months off to do something really neat, and the App Trail just hit me. It's different. I wanted to explore the culture and get lost in it, but also to kind of find myself. I mean, that was really the goal there.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into hiking the App Trail, I had only done a few overnight backpacking trips, nothing beyond 2 days. So I had very little experience. I'd done a lot of reading online, had really just invested myself into this whole process. I actually got a crazy story I don't tell often. While working for UPS, I spent about 23 days living in my car, a Jeep Cherokee, a 99, that I was camping out of, for lack of better words, and I don't think I ever told my parents.
That's crazy, man. So tell me, why did you live in your car versus getting an apartment or living with somebody?
Back to just enjoying it in a weird sense. It was an experience that as I was experiencing, I knew that it was meant to be, or it was something I was supposed to feel and know, and that would give me so much appreciation down the road when I did have a place to call my home, or did have a room with a closet and a shower and a toilet. While doing that, I actually found I really enjoyed it. There was something about the simplicity and the self-sustainability, and just it gave me a whole different perspective on what humans need to survive in a lot of ways. So while doing this, I was looking up tricks and tips to living out of a car, where to eat, how to use the restroom, where do you go kill time, or where do you park for the night, what's safe, what's unsafe. And during this kind of research and adventure I was putting myself through, I stumbled upon the App Trail and some other backpacking blogs that actually opened the idea. And as crazy as it sounds, I enjoy living out of my car so much that I knew I wanted to do something similar, but maybe not as embarrassing. So it was an experience I wanted to continue in some way.
All right, so you're living out of your car, and then what? You came back home before you went and hiked the Appalachian Trail? Did you tell your parents at all? What did they think about it?
I moved home and declared back to my parents that I was going to go ahead and hike the App Trail this spring, summer, and fall with intentions of doing a through hike while figuring out what to do with jobs. They were very receptive of the idea. They thought it was very unique and would fit me well and that I could benefit from it. I think they understood the need that I had to break away and really figure out what was important in life and what wasn't important in life, and to reestablish some deep values and principles. So I went out there pretty blind, started on the App Trail February 23rd, 2014, and went out for a 57-day walk in the woods, covered 745 miles.
Wow.
And enjoyed every second of it. As I said before, I started out the hike with intentions of really secluding myself from others and just enjoying the environment, enjoying nature. At Virginia Tech, I was a natural resources science major, and the environment and science have always been very important things to me. I'm very analytical, statistical at points. But at the same time, I really like people. So to me, interpreting the environment to the average person was a lot of interest, and ultimately still have dreams of becoming a high school science teacher down the road to share that passion of knowledge and science on with our youth and future generations. So in a lot of ways, it was just kind of a well-fitting adventure mm-hmm. that I found myself upon. I would say it was about 5 days into the trail that I was just kind of out there on my own and trying to break records or do crazy things. And I found myself hurt, my feet, my ankles, my knees from running down these mountains, you know, hiking up, being a newbie. I took my time going up and came down fast on the downhill. And you learn very quickly out there that the trail's not forgiving, that every step you take needs to almost be identical to the last step. There's a lot of form and technique and underlying things there that also apply to real life.
Sure, that's interesting. What are some of those takeaways that you learned on the trail that you can apply to real life and everyday activities?
The three biggest things that I learned on the trail, or three words or values that I now carry with me from the trail, are patience, persistence, and passion. I would say it was about after being on the trail for 40 days that, you know, so far at that point I've been reporting just the basic things that I'd seen or done or who I'd met and how I kind of felt. But I hadn't really given a lot of thought or idea to what did all of this mean collectively. Patience, persistence, and passion are three traits that every human needs to recognize. They are so important. The passion aspect is really something that everyone understands. Children understand what their favorite toys are or their favorite food is.
Mm-hmm.
Teenagers and adults or young adults, they understand what they like and what they dislike. And throughout life, everybody's going to have those things that strike home to them, and they're going to have those things that don't really they don't connect with. But mm-hmm. finding those things that you are passionate about is important, because you're naturally going to carry more positive energy. In my opinion, passion is just another word for something you truly love to the point you would work for it. You would make sacrifices, you would forego other opportunities because that one thing. And our whole lives, since our childhoods, we've been exposed to things. You know, it's this exposure that we find our passions. And mine happened to be people. While out hiking the App Trail, my initial reasons for going out was just to get away, to mm-hmm. break out of the daily grind and the pressure of technology kind of places on us today, to get a break, really. And when out there, I intended on being by myself most of the time and thinking by myself most of the time. And what I came to learn very quickly was it's other people that really bring happiness to lives. And so it kind of gave me the idea that, you know, we all are brothers and sisters to some level, mm-hmm. that it is important to take care of other people and hear what they have to say and what perspectives they might have, because it's kind of back to that idea of changing. Every person has the ability to change your life.
Sure.
Every person has a perspective you've never heard before. They might know something that nobody else in a room knows. So everybody does have value, and sometimes it's just finding that value. So if I was the last person on earth, I don't know if I'd last long.
Right.
It's a matter of me connecting with other people and just finding similarities and differences and challenging each other to a better life.
Yeah.
And challenging ourselves, of course, too.
So we've heard your thoughts on passion. Talk to me about your stance on persistence and patience. You mentioned those two P words as well as being very important to you. What are persistence and patience to you?
The persistence and patience part, I'll tell you, persistence has been a real big word to me as well. In today's world, you start to read articles about grit or... Yep. How gritty is a person, or you talk about sports teams and football, and can they grind it? Can you keep going when the going gets tough? Do you finish a job to 100% completion, or do you call it a day at 90%? That's the persistence portion. The patience aspect is the most important, because it truly is being content with where you're at that time. The persistence and passion will lead you to that future, but the patience is really what keeps you cool in the present and able to process that this is a long journey, that this is, if you hit a road bump, it's only temporary. Be patient. You'll get past it.
Absolutely.
If anything, enjoy your downtime.
I agree 100%. Sometimes downtime is necessary in order to regroup and look at challenges from a different perspective. So thank you for your great perspective on patience, passion, and persistence. I'm actually writing a 4-part series on my blog about positivity, purpose, passion, and persistence. It's called The 4 P's of Life, that our listeners can check out as well. Andrew, I want to switch gears here and ask you about some of your favorite quotes, tips, tricks, and insights. So we'll get started with, do you have a favorite inspirational quote that you can share with our listeners?
I have a ton, but top of mind right now is definitely, if it's important to you, you'll find the time. If it's not, you'll find an excuse. And a lot of that's accountability and making sure that what you say yes to in life is important to you and that you are there. If something's not important to you, then be honest enough to make that decision that it's not something you need to invest time, or make an agreement that you'll invest time in something that you don't want to do. Life is short. I know it feels long at points, but you got to make meaningful decisions every day.
Yes, I love that. There's a ton of power in saying no. And sometimes we say yes to so many things that it diminishes the importance of tasks and activities that are actually meaningful and important. There's a great line from a guest on the Tim Ferriss show that went something like, your response to a request should either be hell yes or no. If you can't say hell yes, I want to do that to a request, then your answer should be no. You don't want to overcommit yourself and spread yourself too thin. It's something that I try to practice daily. So do you have a role model or someone who inspired you to be great?
Mr. Cook,
yeah,
is definitely a big role model.
For those listeners who don't know, Bill Cook was the founding principal of Marvin Ridge High School, where Andrew and I both attended school. He is a phenomenal leader, coach, friend, and mentor, and has touched the lives of countless students and families in our community, and still continues to do so. I have the pleasure of keeping up with him on LinkedIn, which is really cool. I would also love to have him on the show soon so he can impart some of his great wisdom and insight to us millennials, and really anyone that has the opportunity to listen to him.
Let's talk about Mr. Cook for a second.
All right.
Back to the point earlier, the 3 P's that I discovered on the app trail and said, hey, if there's 3 words I could describe that I have to complete this app trail, mm-hmm. It was patience, persistence, and passion. In my mind, Mr. Cook is the epitome of that. I mean, he is the most patient man in his position that I could ever think of. I mean, he started as a teacher, worked his way up, that persistence, and was always the first person at the school. Funny story about Mr. Cook, too. Right after graduation, I was by myself walking around the high school, just kind of taking a walk down the, memory lane, or just trying to soak up the last seconds of before heading off to college. And I guess I tripped the alarm, and Mr. Cook came out to the high school at 2 in the morning, and it just found me there walking around. That dedication that he carried, or persistence, I mean, he was just, he would be the first person at school, the last person at school. He would be the first responder to the school. If ever any students had gotten in even a minor car accident, mm-hmm. he was about the first person on site.
Yep.
So, I mean, he definitely portrays persistence in my mind. I mean, just him keeping up and liking a comment or a status that you updated,
right,
shows that he's actively still engaging in his students' lives.
Let's talk about the daily routine. I'm a big routine guy, and as we were talking about before we got started here, I meditate every morning, and I take 10 minutes to center myself, and I actually use a guided meditation app called Headspace. What are some of the things that you do on a daily basis that really get you set up for success, really get you excited to take on the day and make things happen?
I struggle to leave my bedroom till it's clean. As long as I have a clean bedroom, everything else seems to find its way. I don't like to misplace things, so a routine for me is I pack the same bag every day, the same way every day, and I carry the same things every day because they're all important and they're part of my toolbox, if you will. That, to me, the routine of that gives me the opportunity to get to the office where I'm able to accomplish a wide variety of tasks and get pulled in hundreds of different directions. Real estate is funny, where you could be working on one task that's going to take a few hours, but you get a phone call that suddenly throws you in a whole other direction. It can take a lot of time to achieve even small tasks because of the distractions. And back to distractions, I mean, I think that's probably the biggest struggle that millennials have, is there are so many distractions out there.
Absolutely.
That just, so finding that time to meditate or get in your work zone. For me, when I'm at the office, I do listen to music. I work very well to music, and that's me specifically. But part of my routine there is that it gets me in the zone.
What are some of the tips that you have for avoiding distractions and refocusing yourself when you do get out of your zone?
Avoiding unnecessary distractions or refocusing after a distraction is a skill that millennials probably need to work on and need to recognize that that is something that's important. I keep a task list in front of me all day and go through and cross things off. I have it broken up into three sections. One is a must do. One is more of a checklist item that are kind of quick tasks to run through. And then one's actually a question mark section where I purposely put things that, hey, these don't need to get done today. So for me, the organization is staying up that what is on my important list must be done today. There's a lot of tasks that we don't know how to complete. Millennials do turn to the internet for resources and learning and other things that some tasks don't have due dates, and you have to recognize that and organize and complete them appropriately.
When you're writing your list and thinking about things that you need to do, when do you prepare that list and get those things on paper? Do you do it the night before? Do you do it the day of? Do you do it on the go? Talk to me about that.
Sure. I do it on the go. So anytime throughout the day that an idea just pops in my head, oh, I got to do this or I got to do that, I immediately jot it down on my paper task list. Now, if I'm away from the paper or it's after hours, I'll just jot it on my phone and then transcribe it first thing in the morning. Really, I like to have a scratch sheet in front of me all day. I think there's some value in having pen and paper and being able to brainstorm or draw little things up.
All right, so you keep a paper task list, but tell us about a piece of technology, could be hardware or software, that you couldn't live without on a daily basis.
Definitely the cell phone. Cell phone is my best resource. I use Calendar, Google Drive, most Google products actually, and I find them very helpful.
And then you mentioned the Google suite of products. Is there any other, or are there any other programs that you use on a daily basis that help keep you organized or help keep you working towards those goals that you have set for yourself?
Sure. The Contactually as a database manager is very effective in my line of work. It keeps everyone, friends and family and potential clients, always top of mind. And I do find a lot of value in creating some tasks on there as well that are beyond a week's due date. My daily task list is literally for what I'm doing at the computer at this time or today, to try and keep it concise. But anything beyond a range of where it's like, oh, you know, reach out to this person in early March or talk to this person in July, I log all that on Contactually. So that is kind of the backbone of my task lists.
Wonderful. That seems like a pretty useful app in your line of work and really for anyone who wants to stay in contact with people. Well, Andrew, this has been such a pleasure. Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners?
At this time, I have no desire to return to a conventional employer or be an employee of a company without an ownership interest in that company. Entrepreneurship is just so much more than a word. It is a feeling. It is a child, something that you take care of every day. That's all I aspire from here out. Although I believe real estate to be my career, a lifelong career that I plan to stay in, I'd be open to any other sort of entrepreneurial ideas. I just think there's something free about being an entrepreneur, something like that just makes you feel like a kid again. You get a dream. You get to make decisions without being told no, and you have the authority to do so if within your means. I just feel happier. I don't know how else to describe it. Obviously, I'm doing something I enjoy and I'm finding success in it, which is just terrific, but it's beyond that. It's one of those things that it lives with me, and I couldn't give away that feeling for the world. I couldn't.
Awesome.
One other thing about real estate. So I was working with a flipper investor. I was working at a pizza joint serving in the evenings, and not really sure, aside from getting into teaching, what I was going to do. And it was actually my father who suggested, why don't you go check out a career night at Mingle School for real estate? And I instantly said, yes. Yes, why not? I had never thought of this. So I do give props to, listen to those that are close to you sometimes. They do have great advice, and they do care for your best interest. If anybody's struggling with work right now, especially millennials, and you're working for an employer, I challenge you to stick with it. Build some time. Don't be the millennial that gives up on jobs too quickly or that wants instant gratification and those kind of things. But be meaningful when you go for your next career. Make sure it's something that you do want to stick with. If you want to explore an entrepreneurship, make sure it's something that you will quite honestly like die for, because that's how it is, or your business won't survive, in my opinion. You can't go into it haphazardly. Yeah. You've got to dive into it and commit 100%.
Those are great thoughts. Thanks, Andrew. Well, in closing, if anybody wants to get a hold of you, can you point them in a good direction to go?
Yeah, easiest way to get a hold of me would just be going to gogreenberg.com.
I'll put a link in the show notes in the description for that. So gogreenberg.com, is there a contact us page?
There is.
Okay. Andrew, this has been great. I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing some of your knowledge, experience, and wisdom with me and our listeners. I know that they're going to take a lot from our conversation. I look forward to seeing Go Greenberg and Inline Charlotte grow and flourish. And if I can help you out in any way, please don't hesitate to ask.
It's a pleasure to be on your first podcast, Kevin. I like what you're doing here, and I wish you the best. I know that a lot of these things that I'm talking about today definitely are things or ideas that you feel strongly about as well. And I appreciate what you're doing.
Wow, I'm really digging that insight about what it takes to be an entrepreneur and how to grow your personal brand. I also like Andrew's interpretation of passion, persistence, and patience, and how he applied those three philosophies on the Appalachian Trail. I really appreciate you tuning in and listening to my first episode. Please take a moment to rate the podcast, leave some feedback, and subscribe to catch the next episode. See you then.